The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
As a small business owner, you make every dollar count. So what could you do with $10? Go to Vistaprint.com today and you'll get 500 high-quality custom business cards for only $9.99. That's less than 2 cents per card. And at Vistaprint, your satisfaction is absolutely guaranteed. So it's never been easier to turn 500 strangers into connections. Just visit Vistaprint.com and use promo code 5656 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 5656.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup, the Trump administration's red line on health care.
That's essential to this.
And North Korea's missile launches with a message.
It's rehearsing an attack on American military targets.
Plus, the fallout from the leaks of naked pictures of female Marines.
They've continually had this challenge with trying to integrate women into their combat units.
Also, Casey Anthony speaks publicly for the first time in years.
I'm okay with myself. I sleep pretty good at night.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. First, let's get started with our weekend roundup interview with White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer. Correspondent Stephen Portnoy did it inside the West Wing.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Stephen Portnoy at the White House. Sean Spicer, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for coming by.
The FBI director went to Capitol Hill this week to talk to a select group of congressional leaders. Multiple outlets, including CBS News, are reporting that he intended to tell the leaders that the FBI did not wiretap Trump Tower. Shouldn't that be the final word on this?
Well, I think that's up to Congress to understand the findings that the FBI had and to look at the totality of what happened. I think that they've got to look at all the evidence that may be out there as far as what happened during the election. There's a lot of additional questions that have to happen, a lot of things that have come up through news reports and other sources that have suggested activity during the 2016 election. So it shouldn't just be one interview. I think there's a lot that they need to look at, and then they do need to issue a report to us.
Director Comey has been invited by the House Intelligence Committee to testify publicly a week from Monday. If he winds up at the witness table and says publicly what he intended to tell the leaders in private, is that not risking an embarrassment for the president?
Well, I think there's a lot that needs to get discussed about the 2016 election. We've also had Director Comey brief several people who have unequivocally said, Senator Rubio, Chairman Devin Nunes of the House Intelligence Committee, who said that there was no activity, there was no coordination or no activity, I forgot how it was phrased, or evidence to support these stories that have been ongoing in several outlets about activity with the Russians in the campaign. And yet, where is the credibility there? And it's interesting. People who were briefed over and over again by Director Comey came out and said that they saw nothing.
I want to ask you about Obamacare.
Sure.
A number of conservatives are publicly opposed to the House GOP proposal. The phrase they're using on talk radio that I heard this week is Rhino Care. They're most upset about the tax credit provision in the bill. They see it as a new entitlement, and there's a new call to ramp up the winding down of Medicaid
right.
expansion to 2018. The president is signaling his willingness to negotiate, and yet Paul Ryan suggested yesterday that this is the only package that can pass the House. So how's this going to work out?
I would ask any conservative, or frankly any lawmakers, this is the only alternative to repeal and replace health care with a patient-centered plan.
So are tax credits and Medicaid expansion, are those things the president is willing to negotiate on or not?
Well, on the tax credits, no. I mean, that's essential to this, right? If you don't start giving some equity to people who are small business owners, ranchers, farmers, who have to buy their insurance on the open market, young people who may not have a job right now, who are off their parents' insurance after 26, there's a lot of people who, millions of people that have to go into the single market. And we want to make sure that they have the same advantages that every other American has who gets their benefits through either employer-based or through Medicare or Medicaid or TRICARE.
The job numbers.
Yeah.
235,000 jobs created.
Rate dropped to 4.7.
Right. Is the best yet to come? Is this just a floor?
I hope so. Look, I don't think you ever want to own one particular month, but it's definitely a promising sign that we were expected to get 200,000 jobs. We're at 235,000. This is a promising sign, unequivocally, because we have seen small and large businesses from across the country talk about their desire to buy into President Trump's agenda. Business owners are at an all-time high because they believe that the agenda that they're seeing and the vision that they're seeing is one that they want to participate in.
Is there anyone here in this building who has the kind of relationship with the president where they can walk into the Oval Office and say, "Sir, I'm sorry, that one went a bit too far"?
Absolutely. Not just that, the president takes a ton of advice from his senior team, but from a various number of advisors and his cabinet members. He looks to everyone from his national security advisor, General McMaster, to Chief of Staff Reince Priebus, Stephen Bannon, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, so many others on the financial and national security front, as well as every other. These are the people that he chose to come in and give him counsel on a variety of subjects. Ultimately, he's going to be the decider, though. That's why he got elected president. So he takes a lot of advice, a lot of opinions, a lot of ideas into his decision-making process. But ultimately, it's he who makes that decision in what he believes will be move the country forward.
This is day 50 as we sit
it
here in your
50.
Office. It's been a very interesting almost 7 weeks. I've sat in this office and you know, we've had a back and forth in the briefing room, and I've watched you sometimes get a little hot about what you see on TV.
I'd say passionate.
but even with some of the graphics that are used on television.
Right.
What is your take on the state of things? And I want to ask you, how are you dealing with the grind of this job?
I enjoy it. I thrive off of it. I think it's a phenomenal opportunity to represent the change that the American people asked for in the election. And it's really neat to be part of, have this kind of seat in history, to watch this stuff happen, to know that you're moving the country forward and lifting up every American's life in a one way or another, making the country more safe. The president has an agenda, and he's here to see it fulfilled. And I think one of the things that you see in poll after poll is whether or not the American people have voted for him or not, or agree with him on every issue or ideologically, they give him high marks for the promises that he's kept.
But the grind. These days are long.
The days are long. You got to. I mean, you work for President Trump. You're here early and you stay late. He understands that the presidency is a fixed amount of time. You get so long to fulfill the promises, and he wants to use every minute of every hour of every day to do what he said that he was going to get done. And someday he wears you out almost every day. But he understands that this is his opportunity to do what he said and to make the country better and to make it great again.
Sean Spicer, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Our Stephen Portnoy speaking with White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer for the Weekend Roundup. One other thing on the minds of those inside the White House, thousands of documents from WikiLeaks, now online, it says, are from the CIA and reveal how the agency spies on people electronically and bypasses encryption. More from correspondent Jeff Pegase.
The CIA was aware weeks before Tuesday's disclosure that valuable information may have been stolen. The FBI is now working with the CIA to determine not only who stole the information, but whether another country like Russia was involved. Jim Lewis consults with the U.S. government and military about cybersecurity.
There's good data that suggests ties between Assange and the Russian security services. And there's very strong data that WikiLeaks has a powerful anti-American agenda.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, North Korea concerns.
When they say that they can mount a nuclear warhead on a missile, I tend to believe them.
That and more on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. North Korea's caught the eye of Asia again and the U.S. military with its latest round of missile tests. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson will visit Japan March 15th before heading to South Korea and then to one of North Korea's few remaining allies, China, to discuss the crisis. Joshua Pollack is a researcher with Middlebury Institute of International Studies at Monterey and edits the Non-Proliferation Review. Tell me, Joshua, about your reaction to this latest round of missile launches in North Korea.
This was a test of four medium-range ballistic missiles in the direction of Japan that the North Koreans described as rehearsing an attack on American military targets in Japan. So if this is alarming, it is because it means we are still on a course towards a confrontation.
What kind of message, Joshua, do you think North Korea is trying to send?
They're not happy with the policy direction as they see it from the new administration. I think they are particularly displeased by the recent interactions between President Trump and Prime Minister Abe of Japan. They are not happy with the extent of the combined exercises between South Korea and the United States this year. I think they were hoping for some kind of throttling back, and instead what they saw was a two-month schedule of spring exercises, which is rather extensive, and a lot of hardware is planned to show up, and a new missile defense system is planned to show up and has begun to arrive, and I think they were displeased.
How urgent do you think this new missile defense system in South Korea is right now, and how effective do you think it could actually be in deterring or destroying any missiles that might threaten either Japan or South Korea or U.S. military bases in the Pacific?
It seems that there's a concern about the growing sophistication of North Korean military forces. If you look at where THAAD will be based, it is towards the southern end of South Korea, and that suggests that the targets to be defended are primarily military bases, ports, and airfields that U.S. Forces Korea and reinforcements from the United States and from Japan would need in the event of war. So there's a concern, I think, that the North Koreans could destroy or disable those facilities, and more defenses are needed at a minimum to buy time. The idea is that you overwhelm the capacity of a defensive system to track and attack incoming targets, and ultimately you can exhaust the missile defense system, make it run out of shots. Ultimately, I think they can do so. If they are given a free hand to launch strikes, it's cheaper for them to put more missiles in the air than it is for the United States and its allies to put twice as many interceptors in the air. In general, the program is probably more sophisticated than we've given it credit for. So it seems that they are progressing rapidly. As far as putting a nuclear warhead on an ICBM, there are a few different ingredients to that. They've now conducted 5 nuclear tests over 11 years, so I think we would be wise to give them the benefit of the doubt there. And when they say that they can mount a nuclear warhead on a missile, I tend to believe them. You can't be sure, but I think it doesn't make sense to be as skeptical as many experts have been in the past.
Joshua Pollack, editor of the Nonproliferation Review and an expert on North Korea, thanks for joining us on the Weekend Roundup.
You're welcome.
Meanwhile, South Korea is in turmoil after a court upheld the impeachment of the country's former president, Park Geun-hye, over a bribery scandal. Tens of thousands of South Koreans celebrated the ruling while other angry protesters clashed with police. Now to correspondent Holly Williams, who's on the ground in Iraq with U.S.-backed forces still trying to retake Mosul from ISIS.
Mosul is shattered. Iraqi forces pounded ISIS. And the people of this once wealthy city fled with their bundles of possessions, sometimes with just the clothes on their backs. A part of the world so ancient it's mentioned in the Bible, now brought to its knees. In Al-Dawasa neighbourhood, around 150 yards from the front line, Muhammad Yunus made it to safety with his young family. He told us ISIS fighters are hiding in people's homes. Including 4 in his, before it was hit by a mortar. As the Iraqis claw back one street at a time, ISIS has smashed its way from house to house so its fighters can move without being detected from the sky. Iraqi forces claimed they'd recaptured Mosul's main government building on Tuesday, but today we couldn't get within a block of it. And when ISIS is finally pushed out of Mosul, which could be in weeks, scars will remain.
Holly Williams reporting from Iraq. Some new technology is making its way into the hands of some Marines set to return to that country. Correspondent Kimmy McCormick has more from Camp Lejeune, North Carolina.
When these Marines deploy to Afghanistan's Helmand province, they'll take with them some new technology to keep them safe. It's a small rotor-wing drone called the Instant Eye.
The Instant Eye system is going to be a great tool for operations in Afghanistan. It's going to be something that allows us to go places that we wouldn't necessarily want to go for our first look. We can send this thing ahead and it can take a look for us.
The training here also includes countering Taliban drones, a new phenomenon, these Marines say. Drones are being used frequently by ISIS in Iraq to drop grenades and mortars. Now that enemy tactic, cheap and effective, is being used in Afghanistan. Cammie McCormick, CBS News at Camp Lejeune.
A growing number of women in the military and veterans are speaking out after they say photos of them, some nude, were secretly posted online. Their lawyer, Gloria Allred, says there may be hundreds of such postings. KCBS-TV's Randy Page reports from L.A.
We will not be silenced.
Former active duty Marine Erica Butner, flanked by her attorney Gloria Allred, says she is one of the victims of a Facebook page called Marines United, where she says a picture of her was posted without her consent.
As a result of that posting, a former Marine posted a comment asking if anyone had naked photos of me.
Butner is calling on other victims to come forward and file complaints with the Department of Defense.
You are not alone.
KCBS-TV reporter Randy Page, a military investigation is now underway and it's spread beyond just the Marine Corps. Reaction from CBS News military analyst Mike Lyons.
The fact that it started with the Marine Corps shows that they've continually had this challenge with trying to integrate women into their combat units. And I think that the other branches might not have as extensive a problem, but just the fact that it did leak over into them shows that, and overall, the Department of Defense still has to really look behind the curtain and find out who's behind all these things.
Up next, remembering a groundbreaking documentary.
CBS reports The Homosexuals
on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Prices are for base buildings only. Do not include windows, doors, or accessories. Warning! Don't let your business get left behind in what is likely to be the biggest economic boom in recent history. If you need to build to grow your business, call General Steel today. Steel prices are expected to rise, but you can still lock in your price on a General Steel building if you call now. For example, a 40 by 60 foot building is still less than $25,000. Even an 80 by 150 foot building is under $99,000.
Imagine 12,000 square feet for under $99,000.
This building is designed for your needs, no wasted space. And you get the General's quality and 50-year structural warranty at a price you can afford. You can still save as much as half the cost and time of conventional construction by calling General Steel today. As much as half. So don't let rising steel prices put your project out of reach and stop you from making your company great. Call now. 877-61-STEEL.
It's not too late. Call.
877-61-STEEL. That's 877-617-8335.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Some Jewish community leaders say they're frustrated. More hasn't been done to protect Jewish community centers from a wave of bomb threats in the last 2 months or so. JCCs have gotten more than 100. NYPD Deputy Commissioner for Intelligence and Counterterrorism John Miller spoke with Nora O'Donnell and the rest of the CBS This Morning team.
Does law enforcement have a sense of who might be behind these threats? Are they coordinated?
Well, they're certainly coordinated in that, you know, we have what appears to be one offender behind a large number of these. Then we have had kind of copycats. You'll note that there was an arrest in St. Louis last week. The NYPD's intelligence division supplied a key lead in. So you have the person behind the main number of these and the copycats. Now, the person behind the main number of these, first of all, it's your typical bomb scare offender. The offender characteristics come with this person is a typical coward. They hide behind the shadows, they work from a distance, and their goal is to instill fear. And doing that behind the shadows shows that they're not willing to come out and confront whatever the issue is. They want people to jump through their hoops. But this guy's using technology.
Right.
He's using a voice changer that makes him sound like a female. He's using VOIP technology on the phone. Yeah. He's using phone spoofing, sometimes to make it appear that not only is the call not coming from the number he's using, but coming from a number within the location that he's threatening. So we have an offender with some technical prowess here.
What do you advise Jewish community centers to do if they get a call like this?
So, Anthony, we've been in conversations in New York with the major Jewish organizations, and what we've talked about is a measured response. Remember our offender characteristics. Mm-hmm. This person actually wants to instill fear, but he also wants to cause disruption. Yeah. Mm. So the measured response is, rather than evacuating the whole building at the first call, which fits all of the elements of the pattern, do a perimeter search with the police, do an interior search with the police and or a explosive detection canine, and if nothing is found, don't give the payoff to the threat.
John, how do you tell the difference between someone who legitimately wants to do harm and someone who's pulling a prank to create chaos?
Well, most of the time, the person who's legitimately trying to do harm doesn't call ahead, but that's more a guideline than it is a rule. On the other hand, when you have a defined pattern with defined characteristics and a large number of these fake calls, yeah. Then you get into territory where you know exactly what's going on in all likelihood, and while you need to respond to it by checking it out, you may not need to use the full-on response that is going to deliver the type of disruption that keeps this person going.
Mm-hmm. But you're confident they're going to catch this guy.
Everything that this individual does, every technological piece that they add in to avoid detection, is going to leave a different kind of fingerprint that when this person's identified, and the FBI is running this case because it's a national threat, that are going to help identify this person.
So there's coordination across straight lines on this. Yeah.
So what you have is a case that started in the Tampa field office of the FBI, so they're the office of origin, but as it spread throughout the country, leads all come in to that central investigation. The headquarters hate crimes division within the civil rights division is running the big picture of this, and police departments like New York City's are working their own investigations and coordinating those with the FBI.
That's very good to hear. You are the deputy commissioner of the NYPD, so while we have you here, I want to ask you about one other thing. Protecting President Trump, I know, has cost $25 million. Is the NYPD, I know, want the federal government to reimburse the NYPD for those costs?
We certainly do. A letter recently went from the police commissioner to all the members of the New York delegation. You know, Nora, what this is we have an obligation to protect not just the president of the United States while he's in New York, but also all the residents of Trump Tower, both when he's here and when he's not here. Mm-hmm. This is basically an unfunded federal mandate. You know, it's not like the federal government...
How much is it going to cost per year?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
hundreds of millions.
If you talk about the $25 million that was before the election, how much it's going to cost every year is going to depend largely on how often he comes here. So far, he hasn't been here as much as people thought he would. But put that aside. Mm-hmm. Trump Tower, where his family lives, it's his known residence, and now, because of his name, becomes a symbolic target.
Yes. Sure. Yeah, even if he's not there.
And that means not just the residents of Trump Tower, but everything around it becomes part of that protection package. And that all counts, and the city shouldn't have to pay for that from its taxpayers for Washington. It's not like the U.S. government said, just do this if you guys can fit it in.
Sure.
They said, we need this protection.
Yeah.
And we're running up a big bill for New Yorkers.
NYPD intelligence and counterterrorism head John Miller. Now to another group facing discrimination, gays. 50 years ago, CBS News broke new ground on TV with an hour-long documentary called The Homosexuals. CBS News correspondent Weijia Jiang has a look back.
CBS reports... The Homosexuals.
The title, bold and blunt. The subject matter, far more sensitive.
The CBS News survey shows that 2 out of 3 Americans look upon homosexuals with disgust, discomfort, or fear.
CBS News anchor Mike Wallace hosted the documentary in 1967, the first network investigation of the medical, legal, and social challenges facing gay men.
I know that inside now I'm sick.
Since then, the gay community led the global fight against AIDS, paved a path to acceptance through popular culture, and in 2015 saw the legalization of same-sex marriage.
We can do anything that our straight counterparts can do.
But Glenda Testone, executive director of New York's LGBT Community Center, has concerns.
You've got a president who approves of repealing guidance that actually protects transgender students. So I think we really need to pay attention to the actions.
Just this week, the Supreme Court decided not to hear a case about whether a transgender high school student could use the bathroom that matches his gender identity.
It is not normal or natural for anyone to believe that they are the opposite of their biological sex.
Peter Sprigg of the Family Research Council considers homosexuality to be abnormal and says most people are too afraid to say that.
The LGBT movement poses a threat to freedom of thought, freedom of speech, and freedom of religion. And that's where I hope the Trump administration may take some steps to protect against that.
Sprigg and Testone both find the homosexuals relevant today. Sprigg says it's a confirmation of his belief that homosexuality is wrong, while Testone calls it a cautionary tale about how bias can be blinding. Weijia Jiang, CBS News, Washington.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, Casey Anthony speaks out after years of silence.
I'm okay with myself. I sleep pretty good at night.
Please follow us on Twitter. We have headlines at CBS Radio News, and I'm at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Casey Anthony speaking out after years of silence. You may remember she was accused of killing her daughter, Kaylee, and was acquitted after a circus-like murder trial.
I'm Peter King. Many people thought Casey Anthony got away with murder, but she says she doesn't care what people think.
I'm okay with myself. I sleep pretty good at night.
As to what happened to her daughter?
I'm still not even certain as I stand here today.
In her first interview since she was arrested almost 9 years ago, Anthony tells the Associated Press she lives with and works for a private eye in South Florida, but still keeps a low profile because of her notoriety. Anthony says had Kaylee lived, she'd be 12 now and would likely be listening to classic rock, playing sports, and putting up with no nonsense. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
One particular kind of fraud is on the rise, targeting American homes, reports correspondent Anna Werner.
Richard Tanner says the call took him by surprise.
I literally was about to hang up when they said, "Are you at this address?" And it was my P.O. box that I've had for many, many years.
The man on the other end said he was Sergeant Wade Marshall with the Sheriff's Department, and Tanner owed fines of $1,600 for failing to appear for jury duty.
He immediately launched into this very, you know, very authentic sounding speech about, we're calling you as a courtesy. You have several outstanding citations.
Tanner told him he had served jury duty, but the sergeant gave him case and citation numbers. He instructed Tanner to pay up immediately or face a warrant for his arrest. The call went on for nearly 40 minutes on his landline before Tanner used his cell phone to call the local sheriff's department.
The first thing I said was, "Is there a Sergeant Wade Marshall?" And I barely got the words out when the real sheriff's department said, "No, it's a scam, hang up."
Law enforcement would never make such a request.
U.S. Marshals Service Assistant Director John Boland says it's a growing problem nationwide.
These scammers are extremely well-versed in the judicial process. They have frequently used real judges' names, real names of U.S. Marshals Service employees. They've even spoofed telephone numbers that are real telephone numbers to federal courts and to U.S. Marshals Service offices.
Monica Vaca is with the Federal Trade Commission.
There are probably a lot of people out there who are hearing this and saying, "Ha, I wouldn't fall for that."
But the fact of the matter is that when you get one of these calls, they sound really real. Scammers are very, very good at making you believe that you've got an emergency situation on your hands, and they have a really powerful way of getting you to act on that.
Some red flags with these imposter scams. They typically call you on the phone, but most government agencies will send you a letter. And scammers often ask to be paid with gift or prepaid cards, which the government won't do.
Anna Werner reporting, authorities say the best advice on responding to these scams? Just hang up. New research reveals new insight into the teenage brain. More from correspondent Anthony Mason and the CBS This Morning team.
The new study of more than 5,000 teenagers and young adults from 11 countries confirms adolescent brains are all prone to risk-taking. but acting on it varies. Psychologist Lisa Damore takes an in-depth look at that study in her New York Times online article, Teenagers Do Dumb Things, But There Are Ways to Limit Recklessness. Lisa Damore is also a CBS News contributor. Lisa, welcome back.
Thank you.
You talk about the thrill-seeking impulse reaches its peak at 19.
Yes.
But the sort of the brakes on that system don't reach their adult level till
closer to 23 or 24.
So we got four crisis years.
So there's a real mismatch. There's a real mismatch between when sensation-seeking peaks and when the controls are fully on.
But that risk-taking is totally normal.
It is normal. It's an expectable part of adolescence. We expect teenagers to seek independence and to sort of reach out into the outside world. Mm-hmm. But it also means that parents are nervous.
Yeah, so don't just think they're doing dumb things. It is wired in their brain.
Yes.
What I think is interesting is
that the teenage brain is built so that they really want to seek sensation.
Mm-hmm. But it happens. It's different how it happens all around the world. But in Indonesia, I thought this was very interesting. Only 2% of the kids there engage in risk-taking behavior.
Have tried drinking in the last 30 days.
Yeah.
That was the finding. And so what's important about this new research is that it shows that teenagers around the world all have these gawky brains where their impulses can get ahead of their controls. But teenagers around the world don't take risks at the same level. So what do? So we reinforce laws that we know help keep teenagers safe, like driving curfew laws. We supervise them, right? Because for something to go wrong, temptation and opportunity have to come together.
Yeah.
We plan with them in advance for tricky situations they might get in.
Like
if they show up at a party and suddenly everyone's drinking and they weren't expecting that. We don't want teenagers to be trying to figure out how to handle those situations on the fly. One of the things that we see is that teenage reasoning is very different in different contexts. What they can say at home in the cold light of day with you isn't always what happens in the heat of the night.
Yes.
You say agree on an emoji.
Yes. So my favorite new thing is that some teenagers will come to an agreement about a secret emoji code.
Right.
That they'll say to their parent, if I send you the hamburger emoji, that means come get me and make it look like it was your idea.
Yeah.
Psychologist Lisa Damore speaking with CBS This Morning. Some women diagnosed with breast cancer now turning to soy for new hope in fighting the disease. More from correspondent Danielle Nottingham.
How are you feeling?
32-year-old Marianne Liu is battling aggressive breast cancer. She's always had a healthy approach to her diet, but questioned soy products.
Whenever the whole soy thing started happening, where people were like, that's bad for you, you shouldn't eat it, I started to avoid it.
Over the years, breast cancer concerns have caused many women to avoid soy. But now new research suggests soy is safe for breast cancer patients and may even be beneficial.
Soy has been an area of concern and controversy through the years because of the potential estrogen-like effects of the components of soy and the potential for stimulating estrogen receptor positive breast cancer cells.
Researchers found women who consumed the highest amounts of the compound in soy had a 21% lower risk of dying. Patients have the most benefit if their breast cancers are not driven by estrogen. Dr. Heather MacArthur says it's also promising for patients with hormone-related cancer.
That the consumption of soy is safe and does not appear to impact survival is really encouraging, particularly for those women who are taking hormone therapy for breast cancer.
The study only looked at soy found in foods, not in supplements. Doctors say, as with most things, moderation is usually best. Danielle Nottingham, CBS News, Los Angeles.
The caveman diet's all the rage, but new evidence shows what our ancient ancestors really ate and what ate them.
What they ate pretty much depended on where they lived. Neanderthals in the Belgium area feasted on woolly rhino, while the Spanish Neanderthal was more of a vegetarian, munching on mushrooms, pine nuts, and moss. Spoiler alert, their bones do show they were actually eaten by cannibals. Look at that caveman go. Scientists got all this info by scraping off and analyzing 50,000-year-old plaque on the teeth of Neanderthal skeletons.
Hi-yo, dinosaur.
Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Up next, late night TV's Trump Effect on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Say goodbye to thieves. Say hello to CUDA-CAM by Barracuda Networks, the leader in cloud security and storage solutions. CUDA-CAM is a complete cloud-hosted video surveillance solution that captures high-quality footage when motion is detected. Just plug in one or more CUDA-CAM cameras with no network or camera configuration. Video evidence is automatically encrypted and stored in the Barracuda Cloud for secure access from any web browser or mobile device. Visit CUDA-CAM.com to learn why CUDA-CAM is so easy on your wallet, yet so hard to avoid.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Thomas Jefferson's Virginia Monticello estate gets an overdue update. Washington correspondent Chip Reed has more.
Only in recent years have tour guides been allowed to give the whole story.
We believe Jefferson fathered Sally Hemings' children.
Sally Hemings was one of Jefferson's slaves. It's widely accepted by historians they had six children. But for decades, their relationship was rarely mentioned.
We believe she lived right here.
Hemings' room was once a public restroom. Now it's being restored so that visitors can see how she lived.
His entire life depended upon slavery.
Nia Bates is historian of African-American life at Monticello. She says Hemings' room is just one part of a major project that will accurately portray daily life here.
Understanding Sally Hemings as a woman, as a mother, as an aunt, as a sister, and as an ancestor for her descendants.
A story that will now be front and center at the home of Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings. Chip Reed, CBS News, Monticello.
You think the cost of stamps has risen too much? Well, listen to this report from correspondent Jan Crawford on one that's worth more than its weight in gold, diamonds, basically anything else.
The 1 cent magenta, which is here at the National Postal Museum, sold a few years ago for $9.5 million. That is nearly a billion times the face value of the stamp. In fact, it's the only British colonial stamp that Queen Elizabeth doesn't own. And the current owner, entrepreneur and high-end shoe designer, Stuart Weitzman.
This is the stamp in here.
Well, it's in there, yeah. It's protected pretty well.
It's said to be, when you account for size and weight, the most valuable object in the world.
And the only one of its kind in the world.
Well, I keep hoping that. It would be quite a shock if someone came up with another one.
The 1 cent magenta was printed in one of the British colonies more than 150 years ago.
That one is a stamp of Susan B. Anthony.
Author and New York Times reporter James Barron says it was all but forgotten until a 12-year-old boy discovered one of the stamps in his uncle's basement in 1873.
Why care about a stamp?
It's a way of seeing how the world was connected. It's a way of thinking about how people are connected.
The stamp has also connected a handful of people who have spent fortunes to own it, including an American chemical company, Ayer, and now the renowned Stuart Weitzman. Weitzman grew up collecting stamps in Queens, New York.
I don't know today how kids collect stamps.
But his stamp book had one prominent hole, a spot for the 1 cent magenta.
And I love geography. So it provided a bit of an education, a lot of fun. It was a childhood thing. You know, I eventually gave it up.
You thought you gave it up.
Well, yeah. I discovered girls. That was the end of the stamps.
That is, until the stamp's previous owner, John E. DuPont, died in jail. In 2014, it went to auction, and Weitzman bought it so the world could see this one-of-a-kind treasure. But first, he had to get it to the Smithsonian.
You know, I brought the stamp to Washington.
No, how?
In my sock.
$9.5 million. That little piece of paper in your sock. That's how you got it to this museum.
Yeah.
This Smithsonian exhibit is the most publicly accessible the 1 cent magenta has ever been. But this transcends stamp collecting for Stuart Weitzman. He appreciates one-of-a-kind things, like this cognac spectator pump, which was signed by the 1941 Yankees.
The only signed pair of shoes in baseball history.
Whose shoes were these?
They were the girlfriend of Joe DiMaggio. What might have only made it a little more exciting if he had taken Marilyn Monroe's shoe to be signed, right?
And then there is Weitzman's childhood stamp album.
I have said this to anybody who ever asked me about what was one of the things I got most out of my childhood, toys and games and sports or hobbies. I learned history from this book.
His childhood quest, some 60 years in the making, is now complete.
Now, the 1 cent magenta will be here at the National Postal Museum until November, and then Stuart Wiseman is going to have to decide what to do with it. And if you actually come and see the 1 cent magenta, you can make a personalized stamp of your own. Although, I got to say, it probably won't be worth quite as much.
Jan Crawford reporting from Washington. The White House, a laughing matter. At least for late-night TV. Here's correspondent Vladimir Dutier.
Call it the Trump effect in late-night TV. Stephen Colbert has been relentlessly skewering President Trump from this set, and now his audience is his largest since taking over CBS's Late Show. The president has also proven to be comedy gold for other hosts, and their ratings have also surged.
Big news today out of the Kremlin. I'm sorry, I misread that. White House.
Stephen Colbert drew 3.6 million nightly viewers during February sweeps, beating the longtime leader NBC's Tonight Show. Over on TBS,
the short, sharp shock of a Trump presidency has sparked a new American fitness craze. Walking slowly while lifting a one-pound weight.
Samantha Bee has nearly doubled her viewership among 18 to 49-year-olds.
Then, in the middle of the day, Hurricane Trump happened again.
Trevor Noah had his best month ever on The Daily Show, watched by about 1.5 million people a night in February.
Welcome to this week's edition of He Did What?
Ratings have also reportedly been climbing for two HBO hosts, Bill Maher and John Oliver.
It's a bit weird that you've been objectively nicer to Vladimir Putin than you have to Meryl Streep.
Los Angeles Times media writer Stephen Battaglio says jittery audiences are flocking to the hosts with the most pointed things to say.
The shows that are doing well are the ones that are the most political.
So they're really on message, and the message is we have no idea what we're doing.
They go after the president from the first minute of the show.
According to Battaglio,
can I mess your hair up?
Jimmy Fallon, who has not been as critical of the president, is down 18% in the last year. David Letterman often had Mr. Trump as a guest on his show.
Ties are made in China.
In an interview, he said he would have treated Trump differently than Fallon. Quote, I can only tell you what I would have done in that situation. I would have gone to work on Trump.
Obamacare is a disaster, and I actually do have a replacement plan, okay?
Saturday Night Live has been especially hard on the president.
It's called the Affordable Care Act.
Prompting him to call it, quote, unwatchable.
Bad boys, what you gonna do?
But it's February 11th show, lampooning Mr. Trump and his top aides.
I'm not going to be ignored.
Kellyanne Conway and Sean Spicer.
80% of the people in Chicago have been murdered and are dead.
Was SNL's most watched episode in 6 years.
You better run. You don't have a chance.
Now, conservatives will say that these shows have a liberal bias because of their treatment of President Trump and, in the past, President George W. Bush. But remember this, they love to ridicule Bill and Hillary Clinton as well. And after all, they're Democrats.
We appreciate you listening to the Weekend Roundup. Please keep in mind you can do a search online to find past episodes. Search for CBS News Weekend Roundup. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.